All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fuck nicks, what's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast. Welcome to it. How are you? How's it going? I am frazzled. I'm exhausted and I am stressed the fuck out. I just got back from New Mexico, which was not relaxing at all. I don't know what it is. I can imagine, I can assume it's a combination of things, big transitions in my life, big sort of horrible turns in the world, and just my cats. I mean, look, I don't want to be that guy, but I am that guy. I got home. My cat sitter was sending me dispatches throughout the entire time. They were holding steady and doing okay for like 6 of the 7 days I was gone. Then day 7, Charlie just beat the fuck out of Buster. I got home. There's hair and piss everywhere. It's a fucking nightmare. And then she had put Charlie in upstairs, put him in the room to separate them. And I get home. I let him out looking for some love. Nothing. And then Charlie goes after Buster like he was going to fucking kill him. I couldn't even get him. I couldn't stop him. Cat fights, they're not. It was a fucking nightmare. It was just devastating. And now Buster's all fucked up and traumatized. Charlie's back in the room. I got to get him reconnected to me. I don't know what the fuck I'm going to do with this. I can't get any peace, man. I can't even have fucking cats that just, you know, relax. I don't know if I got to get rid of Charlie. I don't know what I got to do. I love the guy, but he's too attached to me. And I just don't know. I don't know what to do anymore. I've talked to cat professionals. I've tried the Prozac. And I just, you know, I don't know what to do. It's just too sad, man. But anyway, I'm back. It's been a while since I've been on the mic. A lot of the shows you heard in the last week or so were pre-recorded because Brendan took a trip to Italy. And now I'm back on the mic after about a week and a half. It's weird. I got a little untethered out there. I guess it's just a forecast of the future without this anchor in my life. But look, I guess I'll figure out a way to move through. Me untethered. I was out in New Mexico, just me in my head, you know, for like a week. Kid came out for a couple of days. I didn't even know how to explain it. Did I mention Sarah Sherman is on the show? She's been on Saturday Night Live since 2021. She used to write for the Eric Andre Show and performs comedy under the stage name Sarah Squirm, a true weirdo, an old school legacy weirdo. God damn it. Thank God for the weirdos. Don't let them crush all the weirdos. They're crushing the mainstream, guys. They're crushing Colbert. That was a corporate decision and a political one. Probably a mix of both. That format is just, it's dated, it's outmoded, it's a warning, not just politically, but just in terms of the media landscape, that stuff's going to go away, stuff we grew up with, stuff we loved, and he's going to fight the good fight. He is an outspoken guy, and there was definitely a political component to it, it seems, and it's fucking a shame. The hammer's coming down, the hammer of authoritarianism on all levels, NPR, PBS going away, maybe not going away, but struggling for a presence after being defunded. And these are the outlets. These are the places where thinking, rational people who believe in progress and democracy and incremental change live and learn and report things. And it's just happening. But Sarah Sherman is a true blue weirdo. Thank God for the weirdos. Look, the weirdos were never mainstream. It's a rare thing. She's done an amazing thing by being a mainstream weirdo, by finding the other part of herself that lives in a kind of the SNL format, which is, you know, can be weird. But Sarah herself is a real fucking art freak. And God bless the art freaks. That's what I got to say. I mean, I always needed them. I needed them to blow my mind. I remember when I first realized there was something out there, not bigger than me, but definitely out there in a way that wasn't me and not necessarily something I can understand. And it's a great freeing experience. Not just like free jazz. I'm talking about weirdo shit. I'm talking about performance art. I'm talking about people who do stuff because they got no choice and it's just incomprehensible to the average mind and even to the slightly smarter mind, but that mind will usually let it happen. Take it in. Break my brain a little bit. Sarah is of that spirit and of that lineage. It was exciting to talk to her. I'll be at Largo this Wednesday, July 23rd, playing with the band. And also, I'm at the 92nd Street Y in New York City in conversation with Jim Gaffigan on Thursday, July 31st. That's after a screening, an early screening of my HBO special, which releases August 1. So if you want to come hear that, I was very flattered and honored that Gaffigan was going to come moderate the conversation. I'm interested to hear what he thinks and what he has to say. I'm nervous about the special getting out there and being out there, but it's going to happen. You can go to WTFpod.com/tour for links to tickets. Now I'm just sitting there. I'm just sitting here in my garage talking to you guys, having been off the mic for a week or so. And I just don't know what's going on in my house. I had to lock Charlie up. Buster is like just traumatized. It was a brutal fight. And I just need some peace, man. I can't fucking stop it. I can't stop the anxiety. It's unrelenting, folks. I mean, I don't even, you know, I told you I was on the medicine. I mean, I told you that. And I thought it was working, but I'm not so sure anymore. Not after last week. I mean, Jesus Christ. I spent a week in New Mexico, just me and my head. And it got pretty daunting, folks. Pretty daunting. Kid came out for a couple of days, but I just couldn't get out from under it. I mean, I don't know what it is. I mean, I think my anxiety is like twofold. I think my brain wants to latch on to things it thinks it has control over. At least the repetition of images of the worst outcomes seems to make my brain think it's ready for anything. And that's some kind of control. The scenarios play out and all the possible outcomes play out. So my brain just sees them all the way through and settles on an entire arc. And whether it's bad or good, that's the illusion of control. Then the feelings in relation to this complete fabrication creates a whole nother level of anxiety, because now I'm reacting to this arc that's fictitious. It's just like my brain is full of psychic tendrils, all looking to grab hold of something to worry about. And they're relatively successful at finding stuff. Every day, I have to go through the process of getting each one of them to let go. And there's a lot of them. And I got to do it like separately. It's just fucking, it's a fucking nightmare. It all breaks down to fear. And the other element is just some poorly parented part of myself wants parents, wants to be comforted, even with bullshit. I think when I'm grounded, I mean, I can do that for myself. But if I'm untethered, all bets are off, folks. There's just so much out of our control. I mean, almost all of it is out of our control. And I guess it's natural to want some control in your life. I mean, what will you do to have some? Huh? What does it take? Is it possible? Well, I'll tell you a story. Okay, let me lay it out. I was staying at this house in Albuquerque, all right? My brain was on fire most of the time I was out there, with different degrees of panic for different made-up reasons. I mean, look, the roots of some of the reasons, you know, were true, were real, but absolutely nothing was happening in relation to those things outside of what was happening in my head, which was just on fire, just generating exciting possibilities of dread. All right, so here's what happens. I had a rental car, and the house was a real house, not a hotel. I was staying at a house. I'd gone to the supermarket to get some stuff, and I arrived back at the house. I parked out front. I thought I parked. I got out to bring like half the groceries in, and I get back out to the car to find the doors locked and the keys inside, which is really hard to do with a fucking key fob. I didn't even think it was possible, because they're sort of designed not to do that. Now, I found the loophole. The loophole is, if you leave the car and drive, when you turn it off, when you turn off the car, I guess the car thinks you're still in it. So the keys were locked in there, and there was no way I was going to get them out. And there were 2 pints of ice cream in the car, non-dairy. I lost my mind, folks. I lost my fucking mind. It was 92 degrees outside. I could not accept that the ice cream would just melt and turn to garbage. It doesn't refreeze right if it melts all the way down. And I just locked into it. Okay, so what would a normal person do? They just take the hit. It's just fucking ice cream. For me, it became bigger. Okay, it was global warming. It was all the powerlessness I felt about everything. Me standing outside that car, fuming in complete emotional, psychological, and physical impotence. I mean, obviously, the correct grown-up thing to do is you call AAA, which I've had for decades, but I rarely use, and this is what it's for. In my fury, though, I decided that there was no one AA could send over who could get into this car because it was one of these new cars. They don't even have the little ridge over the buttons on the fucking doors. I don't even know. Do they use like Slim Jims anymore to get in there? I don't even know. In my futility, I realized I had full coverage on the car and I should just throw a large rock through the window. Okay, save the ice cream. I mean, I'd have to go to the car rental place, probably fill out some paperwork, probably make up a new story. I'd have to get a new car. Could take a long time. Dumb idea. But in that moment, I saw no other solution. That's how blinded by fury and powerlessness I was. I saw no other solution. So I found a rock behind the house. I stood facing the car on the side. I wound up and I just launched. It's a giant rock. It was bigger than my fist. Big rock. And I just launched that fucker, anticipating the shattering of the window, and it just bounced off. Okay. I don't know. I guess they're making tougher windows now. I don't know. When it hit the ground, I realized, Jesus Christ, I'm a fucking idiot. Who the hell does this? And this was not the way an adult would handle this situation, right? So I went in, I called AA, and I was stuck in like a recording prompting thing for too long. I didn't even know if I was getting through to anybody. I just felt like I needed to talk to a human. I needed someone to say, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. We'll get someone over there. And then they told me to get online. So I got online and I reported it, send a guy to help me. I couldn't even tell if it was happening or not. I didn't even know if it got through. So I looked up the car rental roadside assistance procedure, and that would have cost me a bunch of money. And, you know, who knows when they would have come. So fuck it. I did everything I could, and I did the only thing I knew I should do at that moment is I went outside and I heaved the rock again, and again it bounced off the window. So now I'm double dumb. All right, so then a text comes on my phone. The AAA is sending a truck. It's coming from Santa Fe in an hour. So I just had to suck it up and just live with the ice cream melting, just sitting there on the front seat, nothing I could do. It wasn't a baby. You know, I was the baby. I just wanted my fucking ice cream. But I had a man up. Dude, suck it up. Eventually, you'll go get more ice cream. So I just went into the house and tried to bide my time. I bought some broccoli. So I there was an air fryer there. So I got that going. I like that burnt broccoli. Then I got informed on my phone that the truck was coming in 15 minutes. What? Great. So maybe the ice cream, it's probably not going to make it. But I still didn't believe that anyone could get in the car. I mean, that was the bottom line. I couldn't figure it out. Who's going to figure it out? So the air fryer around this time, the air fryer just started smoking. It's just right as the truck pulled up, the air fryer is like smoking. And the smoke alarm connected to the house was connected to an alarm system, to ADT. So I tried to get the smoke out. It's going off. I shut off the air fryer and went out to deal with the driver. As the alarm was blaring, I went out to deal with the tow truck guy. He was a Native American guy. Looked to be well in his 70s. He had kind of a bandana headband. He looked like an elder of some sort. And he had this large wobbly wand with a bunch of like, it looked like just a wad of tape on the end. And I asked if, do you think you can get into this car? He said, I don't know, probably. Fine. I left him to it. And I went back into the house. I called the alarm company. I tell them it was just a cooking thing and not to send the fire department. They're like, they've already been dispatched. And I'm like, God damn it. So now I go outside. The alarm eventually shut off on its own. I got the smoke. I went outside to see the progress the guy was making with the magic wand. And I heard the sirens in the distance. And I was like, you got to be fucking kidding me. Told the guy, like, fire department's coming. I burned some broccoli. So I went out into the street to greet the fire engine and wave him down. And there was a driver and there were two guys all suited up for fire. And I was like, look, hey, fellas, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. You know, it's just a cooking situation. There's no fire. And, they had to slide down the pole and everything probably. And they said it was fine. Look, it's just part of our job. Good guys. And then they're like, let us come in, just do a heat sensor. I'm like, sure. Come on in. So two fully geared up fire guys come in and they walk around the kitchen. We had a nice chat, nice guys. I thanked them. I said, I'm sorry, I'm an idiot. And they went away. And then the guy, the elder, said he got the car opened. And I was like, you got to be fucking kidding me. So I gave him a nice tip and he took off in his truck. I ran the ice cream into the house. I put it in the freezer. Still had it melted all the way. Pretty far gone, though. And later that night, I got the ice cream out and just plowed into it. And it was fucking amazing. It was fucking amazing. And I felt like a fucking child, but I ate like half a pint and I realized this seemed a little too good. And I realized that it wasn't on dairy. Yeah. So I stopped eating it. And yeah, I don't know where to go with this story. I mean, after all was said and done, it was quite an exciting day. I had a half pint's worth of real happiness before returning to panic of what all that dairy would do to my stomach after being plant-based for so long now. Turns out not much, just a bit of gas, which is enjoyable in its own way. So that was the big payoff for the day, is that I got to enjoy a half a pint of full cream ice cream before I realized it was that, and then it kind of, I was like, ah, fuck. And then later, you know, I had gas. And, you know, but that's not nothing. It all worked out okay. I have control over nothing. But sometimes there's ice cream. Yeah, that's it. Pretty exciting stuff, though, right? Okay, Sarah Sherman. I was so thrilled to talk to her because I am a true fan of Art Freaks. And, you know, when I saw her stand up and when I started to look into her, there was just, it triggered a lot of great stuff in my memory about the residents, about the New York performance art scene that was just a little before my time, and just all this stuff that I used to read about and see pictures of radical art on the performance level. And I really wanted to talk to her because I wondered, you know, how she came to it. She's on Saturday Night Live, which is nominated for Best Scripted Variety Series at this year's Emmys. Sarah will be back on the 51st season of SNL this fall. And this is me talking to the beautiful weirdo that is Sarah Squirm. Sarah, I keep wanting to call you Cindy Sherman, the photographer.
You can.
Does that happen all the time?
Yeah, people also call me Sarah Silverman.
No, I'm not going to do that. I know her.
I know, but it won't stop you from saying it by accident.
Really, people, but not really. Do they really?
My friend in high school's dad called me Sarah Silverman for the entire 4 years I was in high school with him, and I never corrected him. Like, let him have it, sure.
That's crazy.
But you get, I mean, it's like, the names sound exactly the same.
Do you know Cindy Sherman work?
Yeah. I went and saw her the last time, a couple years ago. Yeah. It was at that tiny gallery over here.
Oh, yeah.
Spruce Madger or whatever.
Yeah. That was it cool. Good?
Yeah. Yeah. She does the funny Photoshop thing, which I think a lot of people aren't hilarious at, but I think she's hilarious.
She's doing a Photoshop thing now?
She's doing funny Photoshop.
You like, know? What do you mean?
Like making like crazy weird characters.
Yeah.
Totally fried, edited, crazy.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because
she always did kind of wigs and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And now it's like, it's computer wigs with Photoshop. What is this?
That's a good question. I think it's a tool.
Ah.
Some kind of like undoes something.
Oh, it undoes something.
Oh, yeah. Like I don't know what it came with, but you know, you put it over the bolt. Yeah. Got any other questions about that?
Yeah, there's items for people to play with,
there was more,
and hammers.
There was more in the old garage. The knife I found in my old apartment in New York, because the woman who lived there was a German photographer and her boyfriend collected knives.
Oh, that's
and
good.
Somehow that got left behind. The exercise, hand exercise thing was left here. I think that came in a box of swag. That's an unpressed record.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I didn't know that it was like that.
Mm-hmm. That's what it looks like before they make it, they stamp it into a record.
Isn't it crazy?
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
It's crazy how things work.
It's crazy.
So what's going on? What are you doing here?
Oh, it started already.
Sure.
I'm in Los Angeles, California, in Mark Maron's house.
You're hardly ever here.
Yeah, that's true.
And you don't like it?
Well, I actually like it a lot. I lived here for 2 whole years before I moved to New York for SNL.
You did?
I lived right next to Jumbo's Clown Room, and I liked it a lot.
Did you go to Jumbo's?
I went there a lot.
Yeah, the taped,
my friend dances
taped
there.
Boobies.
Yep, taped boobies. Shout out to Emily. She's hilarious. She'll do, like, she'll paint her face, like, she'll paint her face, like, in corpse paint and, like,
and
do a crazy
strip?
Dance to, like, a song from The Crow.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's great.
Oh, yeah, because it doesn't seem like, it seems like I think I've been there once, but it's more of a tourist attraction. As opposed to a degenerate strip bar.
And it's like it's like more of a girls and gays hangout,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, it's like campy.
Yeah, yeah, it's like a funny strip club. Everybody's
funny,
being hilarious.
Yeah, it's kind of like that weird one in Atlanta.
Oh, Claremont Lounge. Yeah. Oh, amazing. And they have a hotel there now, so you can stay in the hotel. Like,
next
go downstairs.
Door?
Oh, right on top of it.
Yeah.
Yep.
And isn't there some woman who's been there for like 50, 60 years?
And God bless. I hope she's there right now doing the morning shift.
I once I saw a very sad thing at a strip club. I know it's hard to believe.
Oh, that's okay. You being there? I'm kidding.
No, I was never one for that kind of stuff. But we ended up, like, it was back before I sobered up, and I was doing Acme in Minneapolis, and it was during the day, and we were just up and drinking, and we went over there, and it was like an open mic for strippers.
Oh, like an audition? Or like
kinda, but it was like, and it was, there was something very sad about it. Like, it definitely felt like some of these women did not really want to be doing that.
But if you, even if you think that, like, that's a real skill. You know what
strip?
I mean? Yeah.
Sure. Well, this was not a professional show.
Right.
It was a little heartbreaking.
Right.
I don't think that's the right effect.
But we've been to open mics at that time of day, and that's way sadder because there's no skill involved, in
you
fact.
You mean the comedy open mics?
Yeah.
The ones that happen at like 3 in the afternoon?
Yeah.
There's too many comics.
Yep. There are a lot of them.
Yeah.
There are a lot.
And I don't know how you can do that. You're just performing for a room full of peers at a coffee shop in the afternoon. How do you know when you're being funny?
I don't. But it's so, I did it for so long that it's like, I don't even know any other way to do comedy. Do you know what I'm saying?
You've done those shows.
I did. I hosted an open mic in Chicago for 3 years. Cole's open mic, shout out, from 8 p.m. to 2 a.m.
Well, that's at night at least.
Right, at least, yeah.
And, you know, it's like anytime you go on stage and it's still light out, it doesn't feel correct.
It's, right.
It's just, it's not. Because when it gets dark, then it's like dark.
Right,
and you can
right.
do the thing.
Right, you could bomb and then like
sure.
skulk away into the darkness
into the
where
night.
No one can see you.
But like, Where did you come from?
I'm from Long Island.
Which
originally.
Town?
Great Neck, New York.
That's one of the five towns.
That's one of the towns. It's the home of John Taffer.
John Taffer.
Andy Kaufman's synagogue was right down the street from my synagogue.
Yeah. I had cousins there in Hewlett.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You're not Jewish. Yes, you are Jewish.
100%.
You are.
99.9 Ashkenaz, full through, all the way through.
Me too.
Back to the Ukraine, up into the Pale of Settlement, all the way.
Yeah. And you have stomach problems?
No, I don't. I don't.
What?
I don't have stomach problems.
At all?
I think I have anxiety issues.
Right.
But I did not get the Ashkenaz stomach problems. Yeah. My brother does, a little lactose intolerant.
Right.
You?
I'm fully lactose. I mean, it's any physical or spiritual malady I have like manifests as like a stomach
really
disorder.
Really?
Yes. Like when you said like earlier, you were like, oh yeah, I'm doing vegan.
Yeah.
I just interpreted it as Jewish stomach.
Oh no. My stomach's pretty good.
You just care about animals and other creatures
well,
on God's
that
earth.
Came, well, no, it was more
you
of a.
You don't care about the creatures on God's green
I
earth.
I care about most of them, but I, you know, if I'm one step removed, my caring is tempered by the fact that, like, I'm wearing boots right now. I got a lot of shit from the vegan community that I couldn't call myself vegan.
I'm literally putting my cup of coffee for the listeners at home. I'm putting my cup of coffee down on a leather coaster.
Exactly. And it's I bought that it was surplus at a shop in Canada. It's for the Alberta Red Cross. Just had these things of rejects and I just bought them. The other ones are Jimmy Fallon coasters.
Wow.
But they're leather too. No, it's not about animals, it's about cholesterol. It's about, you know, if I don't have a bad gut, but I think my heart's not the best.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I got.
Do you think the anxiety helped?
Do you get anxiety?
I didn't sleep all last night.
Why?
I was just anxious. I just get anxious and I can't sleep.
Do you spin shit in your head? Like, what do you...
1,000,000%.
But, like, what goes? I mean, like, I've somehow managed to be able to sleep as an older person. I don't know how.
But magnesium. I saw you taking the magnesium.
But that's during the day. It's not the same magnesium. But, like, when your brain spins, like, what do you... Are you full of dread?
Yes.
Dread.
Yes. Oh. And just then, you know, I'm just thinking, I can't stop thinking constantly about everything I've ever done and everything that's going to happen badly.
Really?
Yeah.
And you just manage that?
Yeah.
So you think about things you've done and be like, you fucking idiot.
Yes. And then I'll play them out and like there'll be like different scenarios and it's, you know, the mind is amazing. What's going on in there? It's like, why pay for the movies when you get ones for free?
Yeah. And you have no control over them.
No.
You literally have to try to shut the screen off.
Yes.
It's the worst. Ugh. Hey, I think I'm sleeping. Am I sleeping? I'm sleeping.
And
no, I'm
not sleeping. Humiliating. But do you see what I'm wearing on my finger?
Is that one of those? I got a Whoop watch.
Because are you finding out about when you're sleeping?
Yeah.
Because, you know, you'll just be lying there and you're like, I assumed I had slept at some point.
Yeah.
But then I'll look at the ring and it's like, oh, I never was sleeping that whole time.
That's the fucking worst. I only sleep like maybe six to 7 hours.
I would love a classic eight. I would.
I can't do a classic eight.
It's one of the things that's going to help your heart, make you live forever if you get one of those classic
famous eights. Bladder.
So you're hydrating. That's good. You live in the desert. You should hydrate.
I hydrate, yeah. Well, what are you, on medicine?
No.
Did you just forego it?
I go to therapy twice a week, doesn't do anything.
Twice a week?
He sits there, he doesn't say... I'm there saying the most interesting fucking shit on the planet.
Yeah, nothing?
He's got some stuff. I was like going to trippy therapist. I had like a dream analyst. I wasn't...
How'd that go?
If you don't sleep.
You have to make up dreams?
Well, I will also wake up in the middle of the night because I've had a crazy dream.
Yeah.
And my most recurring dream is... It is maybe you've had this.
What?
Being on stage, trying to scream, no one can hear you. No, I'm talking, no one can hear me, crowd going crazy. Yeah. Or I'm screaming, no sound's coming. I have a throat chakra thing. So. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How did you land on throat chakra? Which therapist told you that?
Well, the craziest one, actually. These people should be arrested. These people should be in jail. You ever like talk to a friend and they're like, yeah, my therapist told me some fucking crazy bullshit. And you're like, they should be in jail. It's not working. Is my voice piercing? I feel like it's blowing out
no,
the headphones.
But that is interesting because you realize that like these therapists are just fucked up people. What do they have to do to be a therapist? Theoretically, they have to do a certain amount of hours to get certified. But what does that mean really? It's all up to them and their ideas. I went to therapy today.
And how was that?
It's all right. I just started back up again. I hadn't been in years.
And you started today.
No. I just went today. I've been going for the last few weeks. Because usually I'll only go if I need to, you know, kind of get something, like if I'm stuck.
No, you got to be watering the garden. You can't only go when it's an emergency, Mark.
It's not an emergency. It's a specific problem that I know will take some time.
Okay. You're massaging the issue.
Right.
Right.
But like, I can't stay in there the whole time. You're just paying a person to just be like, what?
I can talk to you. Psycho.
Now I'm gonna think about my throat chakra.
All right.
But I don't have a problem with the throat chakra.
You don't because you communicate a lot.
But I have a chest chakra problem.
Where your heart is?
Well, for me, the stress, like, I get tight chest. Like, I can feel it in my breathing.
Oh.
Like, I don't get stomach things, but I get, like, you know, chest tightening.
Okay.
Yeah, that's where it happens for me.
Okay.
Sometimes headaches, but not too often.
From stress?
I guess.
You get, like, dizzy?
No, I wouldn't know. I mean, I'm on, like, the fucking Zins all day. I drink too much coffee. I wouldn't know if I had long COVID.
Right.
I wouldn't know. I don't know what the baseline of, hey, I feel good is. Don't know.
Right, maybe long COVID is just like existential dread.
Right. It's like Epstein-Barr dread.
Right. Which one's that?
That's the one that everyone had for a while.
Right.
Tired.
Like
made
Lyme?
You tired.
Lyme.
No, Lyme's real.
Lyme's real.
Lyme's fucked up.
That's, you have Lyme.
I don't. I know a guy who has it. That can really fuck you up. Ticks.
Well, because they, like, what? Like
it's
some,
an immune
like,
problem. Immune, it really, I don't know what it
there's
does.
There's, like, military testing, and then it leaked from the lab, and then the ticks got it.
No, I think you're thinking of COVID.
No, I think that this was also now I'm crazy.
A little bit.
But I think that there's, like, a theory that Lyme is caused because they were doing some, like, weird military medical experiments on, like.
Hey, who knows the truth, man? You know, truth's relative.
Tell that to my therapist.
So twice a week. Now, is this like one of these comedian therapists?
No. What do you take me for, a fool?
How'd you find your guy?
I had a therapist so crazy that I was talking about him, not to brag, at a party. And I was like, I think my fucking therapist is fucking crazy.
Yeah.
And then this girl at the party was like, what's your therapist's name?
Yeah.
Told her first and last. She goes, my ex-boyfriend was driven into the mouth of madness by that therapist.
Really?
And she recommended, and then on the spot, I was like, who's your therapist? Yeah. Help me. And she was like, it's this guy. And then he ended up being down the street from my house. So that's my guy now.
And he doesn't do anything.
I don't. It's who can say, really.
But wait, what was so crazy about the other one? How does a therapist drive you into madness?
Just, you know, I was having real, is this interesting at all?
You're interesting. Just go with it.
I had, I was having, when the Titan submersible imploded.
Yeah.
I was having intrusive thoughts throughout the day that I was at the bottom of the ocean and I was in the submersible exploding.
Yeah.
And I would be on stage
at SNL?
I was at Talia Hall, Chicago, and I was talking and I was doing my act, and in the middle of it, have you ever done Talia Hall? It's a stunning, tall, gothic, almost cave.
And they give you socks.
They give you socks.
Yeah.
I love the socks. Good socks. You're on tour. You need to change your socks. You got socks for Talia Hall.
So you're on stage.
It's like it has a dark cavern-like quality because the ceiling's so tall. And I don't usually do big rooms like that. I usually do short little ceiling comedy clubs. And I was just faced with the immense vast void of the dark space.
The ocean.
In Talia Hall. And I was at the bottom of the ocean. And I was like, guys, what's good? I know I was just talking about my hemorrhoids 5 seconds ago, but I have to be honest with you guys. I'm at the bottom of the ocean. Everyone was like, oh, I was just at the bottom of the ocean. And you know what I think it is? Because when I pathetically attempt to meditate. Yeah. My mental, for lack of a better term, safe meditative space was imagining myself at the bottom of the ocean.
Oh.
And I felt so calm there. And then once the Titan submersible exploded, I was like, well, that was my fucking spot, bro. Now I don't have a fucking spot.
You ruined it.
They ruined it.
Broke your brain.
Yes.
No,
and now
shit.
I don't have now I don't have a zone that I can just like fucking go to because that was my fucking spot.
You can't go to the bottom of the ocean anymore.
No, and that was and then I would be at the bottom of the ocean and there would be no, you know, because it's like sensory deprivation. Yeah. There's you can't really hear much. Yeah. I can see the sunlight.
Yeah.
And I'm there now. Actually, I feel like my heart rate is elevating because it used to bring me much joy and peace.
But do you feel the submersible? Are you in the submersible or is it just suggested?
I just know it.
Okay.
Because now I have too many mental associations with it.
Just the whole idea of being crushed by water is pretty awful.
And it used to not be awful to me. I used to not feel crushed when I was at the bottom of the ocean. I used to feel extreme peace.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm sorry you can't live there anymore. Where do you go now when you meditate? What do you try to do?
I'd started doing TM.
You did? Did you get a thing?
And I got a thing. So I try to just be at the thing.
Yeah.
But there's this kind of this door that I've been chilling at in my meditation.
Yeah.
It's a, not to brag, it's a golden arch of light.
Oh, yeah.
That I just kind of chill in front of this door.
Yeah. You don't go in the door? Is it a
No, I'm at the opening. I'm at the threshold.
Okay. And is there...
Oh, my God. You're catching me at complete psychosis today.
Is there a point...
This is crazy.
What do you mean? Is there a point where you go to the door? Is there
I'm just at the door, light streaming through it.
But no, there's no sort of when do I get to go through?
You know what's interesting? It's not even about that.
Okay, good.
Because my mantra appears in the doorway.
Oh.
And I bask in the light of it.
You doing it twice a day, 20 minutes?
Nope.
Then what the fuck?
I say that I do it, but I don't.
Yeah.
Lord knows that I do not be doing it.
No. Once a day even?
If I'm good.
Yeah.
Something happened. I fell off. You know what I will? You know what's interesting about the podcasting, which is an industry that you are, sir, you're a pioneer of.
Yes.
Podcasts and the like have kind of replaced people's internal monologue.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Believe me, I'm hearing from a lot of people today that are concerned about their weeks without hearing my voice in their head.
And I'm not saying that it's good that you're ending the podcast because obviously it's not. You have a great thing going on here. But the listeners. Yeah, you should be thinking your thoughts and living in your mind palace.
Yeah. You mean they should?
Yeah.
On their own. Yeah.
Like, think about all the stuff that we do instead of, like, meditating.
Well, I appreciate the idea that it's a mind palace as opposed to, you know, a mind labyrinth of fucking horrors.
No, it should be good in there.
Yeah, but you can't even go to the ocean anymore.
I know.
And, like, and you can't sleep.
I know. I'm working on it.
So wait, so you grew up in Great Neck?
Uh-huh.
Like, in what, was your dad in the Jewish businesses?
He's in the schmata business.
Get the fuck out of here. And you're like a schmata hanger.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. I loved visiting my dad at schmata in the garment district with all the fucking guys.
Old school. Still? Yep. Still there?
God bless.
Come on.
He's trying, bro. Like, retail, let me tell you, retail post-COVID.
Yeah, so he's in the knockoff business?
Yep. Yes, ma'am.
Oh, my God.
And I loved visit. And he makes little girls' dresses. Shout out to Andrew Sherman.
Yeah.
Yep.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yep.
So you're growing up in the schmata, in the fashion district, guys pushing carts around, pushing just dozens of suits.
Yep. And I, when I was like this big, however old this big is, I was like in the elevator visiting my dad. And I'm like, this is so fucking cool. I'm in fucking Manhattan. I'm in an elevator going up to like the 33rd floor. This is like sick.
Yeah.
And one of the schmata dudes gets in the elevator and it's like, Andy, your daughter's fucking cute. I got to get her in my fucking catalog, because he made Christmas dresses for Sears.
Yeah.
And I was like, I was this little big, but I wanted to be a comedian.
Yeah.
Movies, yeah.
Something.
I wanted to be a comedian when I was this big.
How big? Like 9?
I don't even have a memory of not wanting to be a comedian. No, literally this big. I'm not kidding.
Well, who was the comedian that was your point of reference?
Like Fran Drescher.
Yes.
Yeah. That. I mean, literally, like, dude, Fran Drescher, I would, like, go to my aunt's house, and the block of TV was The Nanny and then Golden Girls.
Yeah.
So it was just, like, women being fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
And Fran Fine would shop at Filene's Basement, where I would shop on Long Island. She would go to Lohmann's and
character.
Get like,
Lohmann's.
Yeah.
Oh.
So that was like, I was like, that's my girl. I mean, this is so, what I'm wearing right now is like a total Fran Fine. If this was tight, this is for the listeners at home. I'm wearing like a triple XL, a
Harlequin
giant
thing.
Like a circus tent of a shirt. Yeah, but if this was like a tight little thing,
that'd be her.
This, it'd be her.
And also, she's so Jewish.
Yeah.
So familiar.
She's so familiar to me.
Like, if you're on the island, that's like every other woman.
Yes. Yes. Except she was so fucking fab. Like, she's so glamorous. Like, I wasn't around that much, like, true glamour that.
Yeah. You were around Bloomingdale's glamour.
Yes. But that's why I liked Filene's Basement at Lohmann's, because it still had that, like, it's like the knockoff glam.
You can find stuff.
Yeah, you can find
that
stuff.
That nobody wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. All right, so did you do the Sears catalog?
So then I'm in the, I'm like, I'm old enough where I remember, I'm so tiny and I'm holding, like, my stuffed animal at the time.
Yeah.
So that's how young I was.
Right.
And he was like, Andy, you gotta let me put your daughter in my fucking catalog. And I was like, yes, yes. And I was like, begging my dad, like, fuck, please, please. And my dad was like, no, I'm not fucking doing that. Because my parents, you know, I wanted to perform when I was a kid, and I wanted to, like, audition. I would see signs in town for Pinocchio at the JCC, and my parents were like, you're not fucking doing that, so perverts can, like, fucking, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, they were just like, they didn't want me trafficked in the pervert trade.
Well, they didn't trust the directors or the theater or the...
But, like, you're young. Like, they don't want pictures, like, taken of you and put in the newspaper, because a pervert will see it. Like, that's, like, I have a very overprotective dad.
And that was always his fear.
That was always his fear.
That perverts would get you.
Would get me.
Okay.
And could he have been more right? Like, really, think about that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so, I mean, these were like, this guy made Christmas dress, little girls' dresses for the Sears catalog.
Yeah.
You know, you get the catalogs on Sundays, whatever.
Yeah.
So I bothered my parents enough that my dad was like, okay, you can model for the fucking...
Did he have to check the outfits and everything?
No, but he was pissed because it was, they were little Christmas dresses.
Yeah. Well, I thought that was the pitch.
Well, no, my dad was like, you're fucking Jewish.
Yeah.
You don't know about Christmas.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know one thing and one thing only, and that's like the menorah.
Yeah.
And but like, I was raised like super, I went to a conservative synagogue. No one in my family could speak or read Hebrew.
No. Yeah. No. Yeah. It's just a middle class conservative Jew thing.
Yes. And it's always like this like inherited Holocaust holidays. Drama. Oh, yeah, like, of course. They're coming for you. Yeah. Be Jewish, whatever.
The gift shop with the paintings of the old men and the Torahs.
And we had, of course, this the shop was called the Zion Lion in Great Neck.
We had a guy, Fred, was it Vestin? There was a Holocaust survivor at my temple that did paintings. So the gift shop, you always had, you'd get one on your bar mitzvah, an original painting by him.
Wow. Yeah. Do you still have it to this day?
I wonder if I have it. I hope I have it. They were always just, you know, old men with holding Torahs.
Right.
And that was the whole thing.
Well, I, of course, used my bar mitzvah to do like a routine.
You did.
Like I was hamming it up up there to the point where I got like a my mom. I just remember like seeing my mom in the front row going like, doing cut. Stop it. Stop it.
So wait, so did your dad put the kibosh on the Christmas outfits?
They let me do it. And I just, it was the best day of my life. Like I had to get up at like, I remember having to get up at 6 a.m.
Yeah.
To go to Manhattan to get my hair and fucking makeup done for the Sears catalog. And I'd never worn a Christmas dress, like, you know, stoic Jews. Yeah. There's no, like, poofy cupcake dresses in my life. Like, only very serious, you know,
really?
Whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, like, I felt, like, so glamorous because they were doing my makeup. I'd never had my makeup done. Yeah. And I'd never worn a poofy dress. And they sat me, like, a little Miss Tuffet, or Little Miss Muffet on my Tuffet on top of a pile of presents in front of a Christmas tree. Like, we didn't have, like, all this shit. We didn't have, like, a fucking sparkly Christmas tree with fancy fucking presents. Like, for Hanukkah, I literally got a pencil case. Like, I never got all this, like, fun shit. And but I just remember getting up at 6 a.m. Like, that was the big thing. I had to get up so early.
And get ready.
And get ready.
Yeah, the Jewish, the you know, the kind of the stuff that goes with Jewish holidays, not very uplifting. I mean,
and there's just no like pomp and circumstance.
It's a dreidel.
Yes.
Everything's wood or rock.
Yes.
Yeah. Gold chocolate coins.
That taste like shit, by the way.
They're always dry.
And just like a ball of salted, pickled fish. It's like not fun. It's not fun.
And do you have a taste for the pickled fish now?
No, it's fucking gross. Like pickled herring is fucking gross.
Well, what about like smoked kipper salmon?
No, none of this shit. And I had chronic diarrhea my whole life.
Because you didn't know you were lactose intolerant.
Yes, because like I lived in a bagel house, so it was like breakfast bagel and cream cheese, lunch tuna fish bagel, dinner whatever dinner was with a side of bagel, and then I'm like. My entire life was like
just diarrhea.
Diarrhea blowout, like emergency level. Like never, like oh, I have to shit. Give me 20 minutes. Like it's always an emergency when I have to shit. And then it's like right because I can't have cream cheese on an IV drip.
No challah. No challah.
Yeah, I love
challah's good, right?
Mm-hmm.
Babka.
Love a bob. Well, it's guys very dairy.
That's true, but dairy. No, just egg. A lot of milk?
With chocolate. I guess it doesn't always
have... I guess that's true.
But, like, if I could have a... I would, like, go nuts on a kugel right now.
Right?
Yeah.
The sweet kind.
I would go nuts on that.
But noodle
that's
kugel?
That's, like, a whole jar of milk.
What?
But anyway, so then after I do the photo shoot, every single weekend the brochures come out, the Sears brochure, and I'm looking for my picture. I'm looking for my picture.
Yeah.
I'm looking, and I can't find it. Uh-huh. I don't see it. I'm never in it. Uh-huh. And every weekend I'm like, where's my picture in the brochure? And my dad took it as an opportunity to do like a like Jewish supremacy proud moment. It was like, they didn't put you in the fucking Christmas catalog because you're too fucking Jewish. That's what they told me.
Yeah.
Turned out my dad was just saying that.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, I saw basically when I was, like, I was, like, home from college and I was looking through old photos. I found the negatives from that photo shoot. And I just looked like fucking shit. I didn't know how to smile. I had bags under my eyes because of, like, you know, I had to get up at 6 a.m. I was so excited. I probably didn't sleep all night. Yeah. And I was like, this little tiny thing, like, not even the size of a, like, tadpole, and I had these just like luggage under my eyes. Looked so tired, very old child.
And so that's what did it.
I just was not.
How'd you feel about that?
Cute as a button.
Yeah. Was that the end of the fascination?
No.
So you were like probably really young. So when do you start performing? When do you start annoying everybody with your need for attention?
It's so embarrassing. Like it's so cool when people are like, I was like an underwater welder before I got into comedy. It's like, I just want to be a comedian my whole life. And so, you know,
But like, who were the other people? Fran Drescher?
Just,
who are the other people there? Like,
I was addicted to Seinfeld.
Oh, really?
Like, I memorized, like, every Steve Martin thing. Like, I memorized the Three Amigos.
Wow.
Yeah.
When you were, like, what, 10?
Yeah.
Really?
Like, literally, like, I'll even try to, like, impress Lauren now by being like, will you kiss me on the veranda? Lips is fine. And he's like, all right, cool. Like, I wrote that, whatever. It's not, you know, you're not impressing me right now.
So, but do you have siblings?
Yeah, I have a little brother.
How's he holding up?
He's the best.
Yeah?
He's like my little brother, like, you know, because I was always a little freak. And then my brother, he's like a business guy.
Yeah.
He's like a business bro. He was like the pledge master at his Jewish fraternity.
Zeta Beta Tau? Or one of the
Something like that.
That's just my dad's. ZBT?
Something like that.
Yeah.
Sorry, Jack. I wish I knew.
You don't need to know.
I told him when he joined a frat. I was like, yeah, how dare you? You know, I was like, he's 5 years younger than me, but, you know, when he joined, I was like, how fucking dare you join that? Yeah. That is a codified rape institution. Like, what do you do?
Yeah.
And he's like, shut up. You don't know how to hang. I mean, I didn't know how to hang for a really long time. I was very uptight.
Yeah? Not anymore.
No, he would, like, come home drunk, and I would be like, what are you doing? Get your shit together.
Yeah.
And he'd be like, bro, I'm 16. I'm having fun. Relax.
And you were still at home when you were 20?
No, I went to college in Chicago.
When did you start doing comedy for real?
I did my first open mic when I was 16 years old.
Where? Pips?
At the Hog Pit NYC, because you could do, it's a barbecue restaurant.
Yeah.
So you could do an open mic under 21. Pit. Mm-hmm.
Where was that?
Somewhere in Midtown. I can't remember.
Times Square?
In my head, it's like where Dinosaur Barbecue was, but I don't think that's it. And I can't imagine.
Like Hell's Kitchen, kind of?
It had to have been like walking distance from Penn Station, because it's like I can't imagine myself as a 16-year-old like venturing far from Penn Station. But I wore a bow tie and the host made fun of me.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what'd you do?
I had a joke that was something like my virginity is so old you could get it on the Antiques Roadshow or something like
classic.
That. Well,
classic.
It's also like, who was fucking and sucking at 16 that I was feeling so old?
Yeah.
And then one thing about like, you guys feel bad for that you have to be in this room with me for 5 minutes. How do you think I feel? I have to be with me forever.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good. Yeah. That's not bad.
Not bad. Yeah, I like it. Already aware of it. That was like pretty poetic self-deprecation.
I thought so.
Big. Yeah.
I thought so.
Yeah, yeah. Just the misery of me.
But then I couldn't really take it when the host made fun of my bow tie. I remember being like, oh, man.
You fuck.
Yeah.
Hurt your feelings?
I think I was, like, it was the first time that I was aware of, like, because he was miserable.
Yeah.
He was this, like, big, fat 40-year-old hosting a open mic.
At the Hog Pit.
At the Hog Pit. And there was a game on. There were ribs out. Like, he wasn't happy.
No.
And so I was, like, kind of confronted with, like, the misery of, like, being a comedian.
And the shrapnel of someone else's misery.
Yeah.
So was that, how long did you put it on the shelf after that experience?
I didn't.
You kept going?
I had an improv troupe in high school. We would perform in the basement of the local public library.
How'd that go?
Awesome.
What were you doing?
I don't know.
But
whatever, like, children doing improv do.
Well, when does your mind get blown to create what you are now? Like, was it in college where you started to inform your thing?
Yeah. And you know what was funny too? Like, I grew up like addicted to like Pee Wee and all, you know?
Yeah.
And something like happened where I don't know how to say this without sounding like kind of like a jag off, but like, you know, I'm like a visual artist as well.
Right.
And I didn't know about like marrying the two. Like, even though I grew up on Pee Wee and like was addicted to Pee Wee,
I didn't make the connection.
I would do stand up and then like, it took me until college where I, like, realized that I could, like, have it I could do both at the same time. Like, I would make posters for the stand-up show.
But, like, even with Pee-wee, you didn't make the connection that the set was an integral part of the presentation. Like, Gary Panther had put together this, you know, this really conceptual kind of punk camp set to inform the entire situation.
Like, I knew that that was, like, the Playhouse was, like, the only place in the world that was safe to go to.
Right.
But for some reason, like, you know, just starting out a stand-up, I just didn't realize that it could all be one thing while I was doing it. It was almost like I had a bifurcated mind or something.
Sure. Well, yeah, because the stand-up is like, I go up and I talk.
Yeah, right.
And so, but you didn't, like, there was no point where you, like, got hip to performance artists or any of that
so
shit.
So then when I moved to Chicago, and then how old are you when you graduate college?
High school or college? I don't know, maybe 20.
20?
Yeah,
21. So when I graduated college, I was like, oh my God, this could be all one thing. And then I was in the, like, Chicago DIY scene with these, like, crazy performance artists who were doing, like, nuts stuff.
Yeah.
And I started, like...
What was it called?
The Chicago DIY scene.
DIY scene. So that was something that wasn't stand-up or improv. It was this other thing.
It was just people. Like, there was... Chicago has a really big, like, noise scene. Was crazy. Like, my friend Jill would do this act called Forced Into Femininity, where she would, like, take a bag of crickets and, like, scream into a contact mic and be like, you know, whatever. So then I started this show with my friends called... it was called Hell Trap Nightmare.
Yeah.
Which was just basically just we figuring out how to blend the two. Like, you know what? Do you know Ian Abramson?
No.
He's a comic. He lived here in LA for a while. I was doing this, like, performance thing where I was, it wasn't very funny, and I'm going to describe something that's not funny, but I'm, you know, I'm secure enough to admit that I've done a lot of unfunny things in my life.
Yeah.
I was doing this thing. I mean, yes. Yes. I feel like I said there were luggage bags under my eyes. I didn't get a laugh. I noticed that. I remember.
I'm laughing in unique places.
You're smiling.
I laughed a few times.
Okay, that's good.
The bagel house, that was good. You grew up in a bagel house.
Yeah, I did grow up in a bagel house. Oh, there you go again.
Idea of cream cheese. Yeah, no, I've been laughing.
Okay.
All right, so this guy Abramson.
So I was, like, doing this bit.
Yeah.
Where, like, I started incorporating, like, multimedia elements into my stuff because I was like, oh, yeah, I can make visual art and comedy at the same time.
Yeah.
So I did this, like, game called I'm going to be vulnerable and honest.
Okay.
And just be honest with what I was doing.
Okay, I'll hold the space for you.
Where did Sarah pluck that hair? That's what it was called.
Okay.
And there's these crazy graphics.
That's funny.
Whatever.
Yeah.
And so I would show these, like, blown up body hairs on the projector.
Nice.
And be like, where did this come from? Like, is this a nipple hair, a butt hair, whatever?
Yeah.
And I would, like, I had a laser pointer. I was, like, pointing at, like, the follicle and whatever, you know.
Yeah.
I'd be like, it was, like, kind of crowd work-y, whatever. And
how'd
so it was like a game
over?
Show. I mean, people were, it wasn't funny, but it was interesting.
Yeah.
So, you know, so I had, like, a bunch of hairs and they had to guess where on my body the hairs were from.
Yeah. Was it a trick question or?
Well, then the trick question started happening
uh-huh.
where some of the hairs were from goats.
Yeah.
And I found a goat. I don't remember how this happened, but I found, I was reading some news story because, you know, I'm not gonna say I don't read.
Sure, you can try to keep up.
Yeah, not to brag, I was reading a newspaper and I had found out that, like, some people use herds of goats to manicure their lawns or like vegetation or something, get rid of weeds.
Yeah.
And I found out there was a place called Goat Island in Illinois that you have to take, it's a farm where there's just, like, hundreds of goats.
And they make them available by the herd?
Yes, and you can rent their goats.
Okay.
But they live on this island where they're just, like, eating trees and shit. It's a tiny island. So I called the farmer, the Goat Island farmer, and I was like, can I go to this Goat Island and film a video? And he was like, yeah, no problem. And I went to the Goat Island in a wedding dress, and I just filmed a bunch of, like, very video art videos.
Of you in the wedding dress and the goats.
Yeah, and the goats. And there was, like, hundreds of goats, and they're, like, smelling my hair or whatever.
Yeah.
And so then I would show these videos.
Yeah.
And like be like, do you think this hair is like a butt crack hair? Do you think it's a whatever? And it'd be like trick questions from these goats. And then I would show these fucking crazy videos of like hundreds of goats. And people would be like, whoa, whatever. But at the time, like I was so new to this kind of performance style. Like I did this show that Ian Abramson was hosting.
Yeah.
And all this multimedia content was on one MP4 video file that I had memorized the timestamps.
Yeah.
Like I was like, oh, this happens at 11 seconds, whatever.
Sure.
And he was like, this could be like a PowerPoint.
Yeah.
Like I didn't even, you know what I'm saying? I was like literally being like showing an image, knowing that it's going to be on the projector for 11 seconds. You know what I'm like?
So you didn't have the technical know-how.
Yeah. So, but that was
this big breakthrough.
Yeah. Shout out to Ian Abramson being like, this could be on a PowerPoint. You don't have to be like, and I was being like, you know, I was trying to incorporate crowd work, but it was like timed, whatever. It was
wow. So he took a load off of your shoulders.
I like, thank you, Ian Abramson. You just cracked it wide open.
And now the PowerPoint was the thing.
Yeah.
Did you try to do straight stand-up as well?
I was, yeah.
So you're doing both?
Yeah, I was doing both. But
that was the beginning of the integration.
That was the beginning of the integration. Because I was like, I don't remember what dawned on me that I could do. Like, once I started performing in Chicago, and there's like, one of my best friends in Chicago is this performer, Alex Grelli, who literally, I'm like, whoever you are, wherever you are, get on an airplane right now, go to Chicago, see the best live performance you've ever seen in your entire
life. What's he do?
Just crazy shit. Like, he does this show called The Grelli Duvall Show, inspired by, like, Shelley Duvall, whatever, fairy tale theater.
Yeah.
And he's, like, full drag, reenacting, like, getting on top of a giant cardboard Falcor and Never-Ending Story while singing, like, The Killing Moon by Echo and the Bunnymen or whatever.
Right.
Like, at the same time. Oh, phone call.
It's my mother.
Oh, should we pick up?
You want it? Yeah, this will be good. Hello? Hello?
Hi, Mark. Everything all right?
Yeah, everything's good. How are you, Mom?
I'm good. I was eating dinner.
Yeah? What'd you eat? That's good that you're eating.
What did I eat? I'm not even sure, but it was edible.
Oh, good. And you were playing Jeopardy earlier?
I was playing Jeopardy, and I was playing Blackjack.
Wow, it's a big day. You're really out there being social.
I am, but this is Sunday. What's today? Today's a good day. There's a few things to do.
Oh, good. Well, that's good, Mom. I just wanted to check in. I'm in the middle of an interview.
Good.
And you're doing okay, though, huh? Craig's going to be away for a week?
A month.
A month. Oh.
Yep.
All right. Oh, well, yes. I'm around if you need me to fly down and, you know, do something.
Okay. Okay, babe. It's good to know.
All right. Well, I love you. I'll call you in a couple of days.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Where in Boca?
No, she's in a place. My brother put her, I don't know. She lived in Hollywood.
She did?
Hollywood, Florida.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, never Boca. My grandparents were in Boca for
years.
Are
there Jews in Hollywood?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, they're around. I think they're getting less and less.
Right.
So this guy, the drag show...
Right. So I just like my mind was getting blown constantly. And like my friends, I was doing all these shows with these like electronic guys from the record label called like Haosu Mountain. And they were just like, they would be putting out music from this like band called like Macula Dog that would have like, they would perform with like horse tails and like GoPro cameras on their head, like unicorn horns that were like projecting onto the wall behind, like just doing really out shit. So I was always
so lucky that you found that shit.
It changed my life because I loved comedy forever.
Like, but regular stand-up. So like, because I was trying to figure that out today. I was talking to my my producer, and I was like, you know, I knew there had to be some performance art back there, but like, it seems like inherently you're a song and dance person.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That
yes.
your chops and your stage habits are very kind of old school.
Yeah.
Right?
I would even say hack, don't care about that. I like jokes.
No, I know. I don't think it's hack, but clearly, you know, the embracing that. Was there ever a point of frustration where you were doing stand-up and you're like, there's got to be more to this?
I think that's just when I immediately just started incorporating the other elements interesting to me to the point where it's like I've overcomplicated things. And like, literally, I did. Did you ever go to Weirdo Night at Zebulon hosted by Dynasty Handbag?
Uh-uh.
You should. Yeah. It's the best show in LA.
Okay.
Dynasty Handbag is like the funniest performance artist ever. And when I moved to LA in 2019, I did her show, and I've got bells and fucking whistles. I got a costume. I've got visual stuff. I've got jokes. I've got whatever. And she was like, "You are enough. You don't have to fucking kill yourself every time you do a goddamn bar show."
Yeah.
You know, and
another big moment.
Yes.
So you just could, you didn't have to bring all the stuff. You
could
bring half of it.
I can just bring some of it.
When does it start getting fluidy? Like, you know, when does the, kind of like, didn't you do some vomit work?
It was always. Like, and then even my, like, stand-up was always gross, and,
When did you start using the name Sarah Squirm?
My friend Ethan Mermelstein in high school was calling me that as, like, a direct, oh, I broke it.
You broke what?
I broke the keychain.
That's okay.
Okay.
Don't worry about
it. It's an unlucky 8-ball.
It's an 8-ball. I'm not sure where that came from.
Well, it's an ancient heirloom that I've destroyed.
No, it's a little 8-ball keychain. It's a cheap little hoop. It's fixable.
I'll fix it.
No, you don't have to fix it.
That'll be the thing that I'm doing for the rest of the podcast.
No, don't do it. So there was always like blood and guts?
Yeah, and then meat. And then my friend Ethan would like make fun of me, and they would call me Squirm and Sherman because I was like gross.
It because you got laughs?
And then I like it. Like, I've always liked like Garbage Pail Kids, Ren and Stimpy.
Yeah,
like, and kids like gross.
Yeah.
And so I was always kind of like preoccupied with that a little bit. And then I got like, you know, everybody would call me Sarah Squirm. Like, people would call me Squirm.
Yeah.
And then Squirm just like reinforced this, like, and then I just was going on stage as Sarah Squirm because I would do these shows like in Chicago with like, it would, the bill would be like blood liquor and like fucking, like forced into femininity or fire tools. And I'd be like, I couldn't just be Sarah Sherman. Like, lame. So then I was billed as Sarah Squirm. And then, you know, this show that I was doing, Hell Trap Nightmare, I'd make these crazy posters, like butthole, tampon, whatever, as like a trigger warning, because the content of the show itself was kind of grotesque as well, just to prepare people so they know what they're getting into.
But did you ever look at some of those other weirdos that used to do it in New York, like Ron Athey and those people that were like squirting blood everywhere, and like Karen Finley and like all that stuff?
I don't know them.
Oh, well, that was an old generation.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, yeah. It was like the 70s performance
artists. Sure, sure.
Like Ann Magnuson, any of those people? Interesting, because you got like second generation.
I mean, I knew about like Carolee Schneeman.
Yeah, yeah.
Like people like, I think that actually was a big influence on me.
Yeah.
There's
a woman who, Reverend Jen, who used to walk around with elf ears on the Lower East Side when I was there. There's like,
love that.
Yeah. Oh, she was great. She went on to, I think, write BDSM manuals.
Sure. 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 But I'm not a pervert. I'm just gross.
No. But she.
I'm good. That's good.
No, she wasn't that. Well, she was a little bit of a pervert. But so this is all just happening in, these are all the people like your age and around that area, and there was a whole scene there that was like its own authentic thing.
And it's still good. Chicago's amazing. Like,
yeah,
I don't understand anyone who comes up in New York or LA, where it's like employers are watching you. It's like, dude, I was doing these fucking jokes where I was like, listen, this isn't funny, okay, but I'm just being honest of what I was doing.
Yeah.
I would like get on stage and be like, so, you know, men like tall drinks of water. I'm like a tall glass of water. I'm a tall glass of clam chowder. And then I would just like chug a can of clam chowder on stage. Just like, but, and then I don't remember what the joke was.
Cold.
Right out there. I would open the can on stage. You know,
the white kind?
I'm not a lot. Yeah,
with that milk. So then you had diarrhea after that?
Of course. I'm not, but then like something else happened where like, then I don't remember what the joke is. And I doubt there was a joke really where I had a bag of my own pubes that I was like, I had them on stage. I was passing them around. encouraging people to take some of them. And then something happened. Oh, yes, of course. With me, I was like, come on.
Yeah.
People were huffing the bag.
Oh, yeah, of course.
They,
yeah.
they could be so lucky. Yeah. Take me out to dinner first.
Yeah.
But then this other comic, fucking Jeff R. Curie, he was like, why are they your real pubes? Can't you use a prop? And it like never occurred to me. I was like, huh, why would I lie?
Yeah, now I don't have to wait 3 months.
Yeah.
To get a new
3 months. That's what you do. Give me 18 hours and focus. I can regrow.
Oh, that's a talent. Mm-hmm. So there's all these people that were pivotal in your saving you time and energy.
Yeah.
PowerPoint.
Yeah. Props.
You don't need to try so hard. What was that?
You're enough.
You're enough.
I was like, oh my God, I am. Yeah. I'll be taking that to therapy twice a week.
Use fake pubes.
Yeah.
These are big moments.
These are. They really are.
So what was the response you were like in general when you do these shows? Was it about laughs?
You know what's so, like now, as someone who's been doing this for long enough, like I can say like, oh, I'm experimenting with the push and pull of the repulsion and attraction.
Yeah,
like, you know, people getting grossed out, but then comedy brings you in.
Right. I get it. Yeah.
So I can say now that's an interesting thing I'm playing with.
Yeah.
But at the fucking time, I guess I thought that was fun. I just thought, I think being outrageous is just funny.
Yeah.
I just liked being outrageous. And also, like, once you just start doing stuff like that, like, I also just was so inspired by the other outrageous people I was, like, around.
Yeah.
And, like, being outrageous would, like, we were doing these tours where we would, like, go to a show at, like, a weird, like, fucking crack house in Detroit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
There were more, like, where there was, like, a bunch of crust punks, and then there was more dogs than people. And my friend Ruby, who you met, she was on the tour, too, and she was getting heckled by a man on who was on crack, heckling her with a large candle.
Yeah.
You know, like...
What do you mean? How does that work?
He just... The floor was dirt, and there were dogs, and then a man who was not on with us on this planet just was, like, going up to her with a giant, like, Victorian candle and a holder, going like, ah, like, holding it up to her face.
Oh, my God.
You know, so it just, like, that was just the journey that I was on.
Right, not a regular road gig.
No. But then... I start, because I was like, again, there was this thing of like, I would do shows at the Laugh Factory Chicago and go on tour with like my comedian friends and then do shows at these weird like punk houses and go on tour with my like weirdo friends.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't know what, again, there was this thing like I didn't know so much about marrying them.
Right. And now you have.
I hope.
Well, I mean, how, like, of course you have.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know, like, the alt scene in Chicago, I knew some of those guys. Like, were you, well, I guess they're even older than you, aren't they?
I told you I'm not a day overlooking 28.
Like Holmes and Kumail and Hannibal.
No, I'm not younger.
Younger. So that you were the one after them.
Yeah, like the open mic that I hosted, I think the like lineage of people who hosted it, it was like Cameron Esposito.
Yeah.
And then she passed it off to Lisa Traeger.
Yeah.
And then Lisa Traeger passed it off to Rebecca O'Neill and Sonia Dinley, and then they passed it off to me and Alex.
Oh, so that bunch.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, but when did you start? When you came out here in 2019?
Yeah.
But you were involved. Like, I have to assume that, like, Tim and Eric and, like, didn't you?
Oh, my God, yeah. That like was, that, like, I worshipped them.
Yeah.
Well, that's funny. So, then in Chicago, like, I had a bunch of weirdo comedy friends. My friend Toler Wolf was, like, the funniest guy ever. He came from Madison.
Yeah.
And so his home club was Comedy on State. And they were doing a weekend. Eric Andre was doing a weekend in Comedy on State.
Yeah.
And so they called my friend Toler.
Yeah.
And they were like, come open for Eric because he's like, you know, Toler's a freak.
Yeah.
And Toler was like, Sarah, you should come. Like, you know, you're also a freak. So we took the bus to Madison. And I think Eric thought that we were like local Wisconsin college kids.
Yeah.
But we were like 25-year-old, like kind of real comedians
weirdos
from Chicago.
Yeah.
So he was like, after our sets, he was like, who are you? You're a man. Who are you? Like, he thought we were like 18-year-old, whatever.
Yeah.
And so then I met Eric, and Eric, like, changed my life. Like, he brought me and Toler on the road with him.
Oh, yeah?
And I, like, travel. Like, I opened for him on this big tour with, like, a tour bus. Yeah. And, like, those were the best shows of my, because they were Eric Andre people. So they were, like, ripping their fucking faces off, begging for the Eric to dump ranch all over their face. Like, it was amazing. And then I, so then I moved in 2019. I moved to L.A. because I was going to go, like, work with on some Eric Andre show stuff.
Yeah. And did you do it?
I did it, and I loved it. I love L.A.
Yeah, but I mean, Eric was a pivotal part of it.
Also, when you're like a young comedian, and like your idol is like, you rock, dude. Come on, let's go.
let's take some chances.
Crazy.
Yeah,
and even Eric, like Eric, took me on the road with him, and he, you know, a lot of my comedy was like really, I mean, my comedy still is like, I'm disgusting, bleh, whatever, annoying.
Yeah.
Eric would be like, you're so self-deprecating on set. Cause I would I don't even know if it's ADD or it's just like, I'm constantly commenting on anything that happens in the room. Yeah. Like, you're going to the bathroom. What number are you doing? Like, whatever. Yeah. So I'd be like, I'm bombing. You guys hate this, whatever. And Eric would be like, you're not bombing, so why are you giving people an opportunity to not fucking like you? What's your fucking problem?
Yeah.
And it's like a very Jewish, like, there could be a room full of people, but you only see the one empty seat.
Sure,
you know what
of course,
I'm saying?
Yeah,
so, like,
or the one person not laughing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, like, that was just me fully projecting a mental illness on people who just wanted a good time on a weekend. Like, yeah. They don't need my fucking baggage. They're there. They had a long, hard day at the fucking hospital or wherever they worked. They paid $45 to be there or whatever, plus drinks. They don't need my fucking shit.
Yeah.
So Eric was like, why are you saying you're not bombing? You rock.
Yeah.
So he,
did you stop doing it?
I think I've stopped doing it, like, honestly. Like, now I just have, like, a way to talk about it.
Right.
As opposed to just, like,
feeling
you
it.
Hate me.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's less, I try to be less pathetic.
So that's good. That's another part of the evolution.
Am I talking way too much?
No.
You made a coffee that's turned me insane.
I know. It's pretty good, right? I make it strong. But, so Eric Andre was the one that kind of, made you feel confident in what you do.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, like, you know, all my friends that I was doing stuff with in Chicago, like, you know, you're supporting each other. And, like even you were saying, like, open mics stink because it's like, what, it's a fucking crowd of a bunch of comedians?
Yeah, but it's a community,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, and, like, yeah. You know.
But it's insulating.
Yeah, it is.
Right.
Yeah, right.
So you're not, like, you know, you can all protect each other from the fact that no one gives a fuck what you're doing.
Right. Even though everyone's like a fucking, it's like Chicago, so everyone's like a drunk, so, you know, whatever.
So being out into the world of the real show business with this guy who does a specific thing.
Like, I couldn't believe it. I'm like, Eric Andre thinks we're cool? Like, what the fuck? Like, having a real, like, comedian thinking you're off. I mean, and that's another thing, like, doing comedy in Chicago, like, real comedians, quote unquote, would come through and be like, you know,
what are you doing? Is that what they would be like?
Or just like, if you even got one compliment from a real comedian, it would be like life-changing. Like, I remember, like, Drew Michael, you know him, he came to the mic that I was hosting.
Was he from there?
Yeah, he's from Chicago, and he came back, and I was hosting this mic, and he was like, you're great. And I'm like, a comedian with, like, a fucking HBO special thinks I'm fucking great. What the fuck?
Well, I mean, when you are in the community that you're in, which is that, you know, straddling this punk aesthetic and just stand-up, you're not, like, mainstream stand-ups don't see you in the same way.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that kind of judgment has got to be kind of pressure.
But I'm, like, so, like, I'm addicted to getting, I need to get past at clubs. Like, there's just this, like, I need that validation that I'm, like, funny. Because
that's the
thing with, like, weird crap. It's like, all right, is this just fucking weird crap that's interesting and not funny?
Yeah, but you've established yourself as somebody who has control over it. I mean, weird crap has always been there.
Yeah, right.
But it's usually only one or two per generation of comics who can do it. You know, like, a lot of people use anti-comedy as an excuse to not do regular comedy.
Right.
But the ones that transcend it and make it work are rare, and you're one of them.
Well,
like, you know, Nathan Fielder was an alienator.
Yeah.
You know, and he's turned out to be kind of a genius.
Yes. Yes. And that the term anti-comedy, like, I've been called anti-comedy.
No, I know.
And I need it, like, besides the fact that I would never want to do something not funny, like, I could bomb. I'm a regular old Oppenheim. I'm out there bombing.
Yeah.
But it's to
But you
call
believe
it,
it's funny.
I'm trying.
You're right.
And anti-comedy, like, besides the fact that it's like I would hope that what I'm doing, anti-comedy, you know, being called that pisses me off, quite frankly, because I really am trying to make people laugh.
Well, I think anti-comedy is actually a school of thought more than just a criticism.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean?
Right. Or it's like, I don't think anyone sets out to make anti-comedy.
Well, a couple of guys
attitudes.
Yeah, bad attitudes. Yeah, that's the whole thing.
Right.
And they can't figure out how to be funny.
And it's like missing the point. Like, bro, I am fucking Jewish. I have a black bottomless hole inside of me that needs to hear laughter badly.
Yeah.
I've clocked every time that you have not laughed today.
Come
you know
on.
What I mean? But it's like, I need to call it anti-comedy is to negate the like mental illness of needing to hear the laughs.
No, know? I think that's what makes you different. I wasn't saying what you were doing with anti-comedy.
Yeah.
But you are in the oddball range.
Totally.
So like when a club is assessing you, especially now,
right.
They know that like, well, she knows how to do this.
Right.
She's a thing.
Right.
Not like, what the fuck is this person doing?
Right.
You know?
It's definitely a thing. Say what you will about me, it's a thing.
Totally a thing. Yeah. It's a Sarah Squirm thing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Thing.
So, what, you want to get past at the store?
Yeah, I want to be a fucking comedian.
What do you do for 15 minutes?
What's
your 15-minute set? How much shit do you need to bring on stage?
I'm so loving stand-up that, like, even if you come and pay, please come to the show. Even if you come to the show, I'm having so much fun doing stand-up that all the bells and whistles get so pushed towards the end that I forget to even do them, and
I cram
them all into the last, like,
oh, that's good.
You know what I mean? So, like,
full circle.
Yeah.
So, now, when you did, like, because I think on SNL, honestly, that they've let you do you to a degree where they trust your instincts.
Yeah.
And so you're able to like write with whoever you're writing with and do Sarah stuff that is still pretty gross, but they know you can pull it off, I have to assume, at this point.
Well, SNL was like a real comedy boot camp, for real, because it's like, at the end of the day, I mean, everyone could say whatever they want about SNL.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, there's like gotta be jokes.
Yeah.
And like, even like as much comedy as I was doing, like, you know, us talking about like I needed laughs or whatever, it's like, for real, everything on the show is like 3 to 4 minutes. Like, there's got to be a joke every couple seconds.
Sure.
So it's a real boot camp, and like, all right, you want to do some weird fucking shit where you got like fucking meatballs all over your body? There's got to be fucking jokes. Like, yeah, and it's a
that's
real.
That's not enough of a joke.
No. And that was, I mean, I can't stop talking.
Yeah.
But getting there, I just so didn't know what I was going to do. I was so wigged out. I was like, I don't know how I'm going to do this. What, like, whatever. And like, I got there and I met Dan Bulla, who like, he wrote there for a couple years, and he like, he's the guy in all the Sandler specials playing the piano.
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah.
He called me and was like, what if we did it? I still didn't know what I was doing. And he was like, let's do a sketch where you're covered in meatballs. And I was like, thank you. Thank you. You see me, you get it. You know. And he was like, and there's going to be jokes. And I'm like, okay, yes.
Yeah.
It's not enough to just be weird or whatever.
Yeah. So you figured that out.
I didn't. I had a lot of help.
Yeah.
Yes.
But it was a relief. It's got to be a relief when you stop at meatballs and someone goes, how about these jokes? You got to be like, great.
Right.
You know?
Isn't that amazing? At the end of the day, there has to be jokes.
Right. It's a good lesson to learn when you're covered with meatballs or meat or anything.
Yep.
Or
I was covered in meat for a long time. Well, that was another, like, I would literally go to the meat warehouse in downtown Chicago because you could get, there's a bucket of pig heads that they give away for free or like 5 cents.
Yeah.
And like, I would cover my body in like raw meat from the, like, that they were like getting rid of because it was like going rotten and get, you know, whatever, for like some hilarious video or whatever. And, like, it's like, right, I could have made fake meat. I don't know why it has to be real.
Oh, my God.
You're, like, the most popular girl in town.
But why is it coming through the computer?
Because you have to show me how popular you are.
The old man. No, I know this is a pest control guy. Well, that's fucking great. You know, it's all been sort of like these moments in your life that have helped you define who you are, and it kind of helped you arrive at what you're at.
And people always just think of like stand up as so like, oh, it's so lonely. You're in your car, you're on the road, you're in a hotel, like whatever. It's like the things that have been the most helpful are like other fucking people.
Like, well, I think also with you, you know, because you're specific and the people that get you and want to see you, it's probably like this community of weirdos that you can kind of trust, yeah. Right? So when you go on the road, I'm sure there are people that are wearing a meat hat
right.
that are like, what's going on? You want to go to this thing?
Right. And they're insane and they want to smell my hair, but that's, I love them. And they can. Yeah.
Well, that's good that it worked out. So you just write mostly with that guy. What did you do for your audition?
I did stand-up about gross stand-up. Like, I didn't know. Well, in Chicago, I did Improv Olympic. I did I.O.
Yeah.
It wasn't for me. It wasn't, like, I found stand-up after college for real, and that, like... Because, you know, I was just trying to figure out, like, doing improv, doing, I was just trying to, and then I realized, like, stand-up was for real, because, like, in improv, they were like, well, you got to, like, dress normal, and I was and like,
I'm work with other people, yeah.
But then, so I think, well, I want to put a pin in that, working with other people, because SNL has made me realize that that's what life's about. I am the most difficult person to work with, but it doesn't mean I don't love it.
Yeah.
When I was like 21, I was at I.O. and I like did a showcase for SNL because Sharna was like, oh, you know, you should do it or whatever. And I was like, I don't know, whatever. And I did like I thought you had to do like a character showcase.
Yeah, sure,
so I did 5 minutes that were kind of characters. It was awful.
Yeah.
Awful.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, yeah, whatever. This is like, I'm not good at this, whatever. And then I was like doing stand-up, whatever. And then when I was like, I was 28, then they had asked me to showcase again.
Yeah.
And I was like, I learned like not to do the fucking, I can't do the fucking character, whatever. So then I just did my own stand-up, which was like blue and terrible, whatever. Yeah. And that worked. And I like, I truly do wonder, like, do they remember that the 21-year-old?
Right. Like, I'm sure he does.
It was terrible. It was because I thought that's what you had to do.
Well, they wanted to see you again. They knew your name.
I don't think they knew that that was the same person. Like 7 years later, like I just ended up because I had gotten the JFL New Faces.
Oh, okay.
So I was like, I don't think they knew that was the same person.
Oh, that's wild.
Yeah.
So you didn't make. You just made it. You just did the showcase in Chicago.
Yeah,
you didn't
like
you didn't go to the you didn't go to the studio.
I barely made it out of the room. Yeah. It was terrible. It was humiliating. Because I was like, oh, I have to do a character. Hello. I'm a mop. You know, I didn't know. I can't do that. I'm not talented. Like, I can't do, like, that a voice. You know what I mean? True. I can't do, like, what I thought.
You can't do it on your own volition. But if you were assigned it, you could figure it out.
Gun to my fucking head.
Yeah.
If you were, like... Try that. I could figure it out.
Yeah. Do you get the gun to the head a lot at SNL?
It's never like made it to air, I don't think. Yeah. Oh, I did like a Nancy Grace thing.
Oh, yeah.
Because that is like the whole journey of SNL has been like try these things you've never done before that you have no training or experience and do it on live television in front of people who hate you. Millions of people who hate you.
Hate you?
Well, you know, it's not like I'm not like amazing. So like, but it's like.
You are now.
Sorta. I'm getting, but it's like I'm learning. That's all I'm trying to is learning. And so it's just like that's what's been so amazing. It's like, you know, they're like, you're in a blonde wig and you're like a woman.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay. Yeah. All right. Figure that out for 4 years. You know what I mean? Or like, you know, I'm so, now that I've been there long enough and you like get to know the writers, they're like, you know, a writer, Mike DiCenzo is like, all right, you're going to play Katy Perry. I'm like, and this was something at table read.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, I'll try, like fucking, I've never sang in front of people, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I'm like, all right, I'll try fucking being Katy fucking Perry.
And
I guess it didn't do good enough to leave the table read, but you know, it's just trying stuff like, and I feel so grateful because it's like, when am I, or in life, are you, like, given that gift of just, like, try it?
Yeah.
And, like, it's not like I had to try it in my basement and pay for it and, like, suffer.
And it's also good to be put on the spot.
Yes. It gets you out of your head.
Yeah, you don't overthink it until later.
And that's another thing about us. It's you can't overthink anything. There's no time. There's no sleep.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously there's like shit that can come out of that that's not amazing.
Yeah.
But it's been like I can be – I don't want to call myself a perfectionist because nothing I make is even good. So it's like why – it's like perfection. It's like
no,
why
that's
you,
not
you know,
true.
But you know what I'm saying. It's like not – but it's like I can belabor something and be anxious about something and like whatever.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I've been doing stand-up for 10 years, you'll never see a fucking clip of me on it online. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like, because it's not done. It's not done. It's not finished.
No one's like sneaking a phone in to.
No one knows that I do stand up. No one on God's green earth knows it.
What? They see you tour?
I tour, but they don't know what it is.
Yeah. Well, call it stand up.
Or whatever it is.
Right. Sure. So maybe that's it. Maybe if you start calling it stand up.
I do call it Santa.
Okay, good.
I'm like, it's that fucking Wise Guys this weekend. What do you think it is? It's not a sermon. I mean, it is, but
Wise Guys is okay.
I love clubs.
Yeah, the one in Salt Lake.
Yeah,
that's good.
I did Vegas a couple weeks ago.
I haven't been to their new one. I like their old one.
I did the new one.
Yeah, I like the old one in Vegas, the one with the low ceilings, seats about 200 in the Arts District. But I know
that's the one. That's the one I did
with Pauly Shore on the outside.
Oh, my God, painting. He is on the outside. Yeah, God bless.
Yeah, no, I like that room. I'll go work out there all the time.
Well, I had gotten put
and
in
Keith's
like...
Keith's a good guy, the guy who owns the place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had been put, like, just because I also, like, had done a lot of stuff with, like, musicians and stuff, I was always like, I want to do rock rooms. Yeah. I want to do theater.
I don't like rock rooms.
I don't like anything besides comedy clubs anymore.
Well, and let's say seat them. They got to seat them.
Seat them.
The standing up thing I can't do.
Dude, I did like fucking Central Park, sun out, 90 degrees, opening up for like an amazing band that I obviously wanted them to like me.
Yeah.
You can't just win
in that situation.
I never learn. I do it all the time. I never learn. I always think it's going to be different. I always think I can convince these people.
Yeah. No, it's you got to learn just so you don't humiliate yourself.
I'm fucking 32, and I haven't learned.
You got a lot of time. So with the collaboration thing, you've learned to do it.
It's life.
Yeah.
It is. And now, like, I'll go on the road with my best friend, Jack Bensinger, who's the funniest person alive.
Yeah.
And, like, after all of our sets, like, we punch each other jokes up. Like, it's like, that's like... People get like weird, like when you get off stage and then someone like gives you a like punch up or something. Yeah. I'm like, that is.
I don't mind it.
It's a Christmas present.
Yeah.
David Spade, I opened for Sandler the first time. I said, you know, I'm talking about like my crotch being like a rotten pastrami sandwich or whatever.
Yeah.
It's not funny, but you know, it's evocative.
Good setup. Yeah.
And I get off stage and David Spade goes, you got so much old meat in your underwear, you got to keep a silica packet in there. And I go, thank you. David Spade just gave me a fucking joke and it's not even fucking Christmas.
Yeah.
But people don't like that.
I don't mind it. Chris Rock gave me a tag that I used for this whole tour. I don't think it made the special. But it was like, I would have never gotten it.
Yeah.
The setup was funny enough and that's all he was doing. And then he just throws me this line and I'm like, all right.
And even if that line doesn't work, it helps you think of a different direction.
But he did. Now he doesn't work. It just kills. It's one line. I'm like, God damn
it.
Fuck him for being like so on it.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. I think literally the silica packet joke gets probably more laughs than it's like part of a 7-minute bit.
Yeah, and that's the big laugh?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Of course.
Those old pros.
I know. I even said that just to brag.
Yeah.
Yeah, David Spade.
Yeah, through your line, through your joke.
Yeah.
Well, he's a big fan, isn't he?
Yes, I love him. God bless.
How do your parents feel about your work?
They're obsessed.
Oh, they are?
Yeah, they wear my merch.
They do?
Yeah.
Oh, good. I was going to give you that t-shirt, but yeah, it's upstairs.
You don't want to give it to me anymore?
Well, I have to go. I thought I pulled it down. I didn't, like, I did these t-shirts. I told you about it when we were texting. That I don't know where the idea came from or why I thought it would sell, but it's just so weird. And I thought, well, maybe you could wear one.
I'd easily wear
maybe
one.
Maybe. It just says Nerdcock on it.
That sounds great. It sounds like a shirt I'd wear.
I thought it was such a breakthrough. Like back in the day when alt comedy was so hot, I thought like now the nerds have right, the swagger. So I'm like, right. I'm just like, just put nerd cock on shirts.
And it flew off the shelves. Like
no one bought them. No one.
Cowards.
It doesn't matter.
Everyone's a coward.
Even I could. I was embarrassed to wear them. Because then I got to explain it. I'm like, I can't explain it. I don't even
It's a
know.
Vibe. You either get it, you get it, you don't, you know.
Yeah, I just, I couldn't get behind it. I've made
oh my God.
Many bad attempts
I feel
at
like I talked like
selling merch.
So crazy a lot.
Isn't this what, that's what it's supposed to be.
I know. We talked about me when I was 10, like for so long.
It's good though.
Okay.
You feel all right?
Yeah, I was like.
You're not going to fester?
No, I just like hope I'm like, what did I say?
It was great.
Okay, great.
I enjoyed it. I'm turning it off
Goodbye.
Now.
Goodbye.
See, that was amazing. How great was that to talk to her? Saturday Night Live is nominated for Best Scripted Variety Series at this year's Emmys. Hang out for a minute, folks. Hey, people, if you want more stuff from SNL, Full Marin subscribers can always listen to the Lorne Stories bonus episode. We posted it last September, and it's 2 hours of interviews with former SNL cast members talking about Lorne.
And then I did this sketch I used to do at the Groundlings. There was a song at the end of the sketch where it's about this gold man who panhandles, and basically it's the guy dressed all in gold, and if you give a dollar or something, they'll do the robotic movement, and a robber comes and takes his
I hate those guys, the guys that stand still.
Yeah so a robber comes, takes all his money, and then he is very sad, and then somebody a little kid, and the dad said, "Why is this gold man so sad?" "Well, I don't know, but if you give him a dollar, maybe he'll tell you. And if you give him $2, maybe he'll tell you in song." So the kid puts $2 in, and I sing this really uplifting song about, you know, the tough life of a gold man. And then at the end, it's you find out, well, it's because I got a little secret. I suck cock for my face paint. I suck cock for my face paint. And then the rest of the song is just the words cock and face paint, basically. I suck cock for my face paint. Cock, face paint. Cock, 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 face paint. And it's just like cock, cock, face paint, cock, cock, cock. It's just like the probably 250 times saying the word cock. And I did that at SNL as the final thing, and then I walked out, and Lorne was right there, and he said, "Oh, thank you for coming." And I said, "I'm sorry about all the cocks." I didn't know what else to say. I was just like, and then that was it. And then I found out I got the job.
I'm sorry about all the cocks.
Sorry about all the cocks.
To get that episode and new bonus episodes twice a week, subscribe to The Full Marin. Just go to the link in the episode description and go to WTFpod.com and click on WTF Plus. And a reminder before we go, this podcast is hosted by Acast. I'm a little clunky on the guitar, but that's okay. Here. We'll be right back.
Boomer lives, Smokey and LaFonda, cat angels everywhere.